Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You may as well play Blue Monday. Why don't you pull Blue Monday out? Because I'm here live. I don't think anybody's out there. I mean, I decided to come in today, of course, because I'm bored out of my mind looking at Huckster B and Hillary the Silent and the daughter there who won't talk to a nine-year-old. And, of course, Rudy, I told you, wouldn't sell outside of the Waldorf Astoria. I told you west of the Hudson River he's worthless. I told you. I mean, everything I said was right this year. Everything, without exception. So I decided to come and invent, that's all. Make believe you know me. Make believe you know it's the Savage Nation. You still on vacation? I'm not. Morons. How many days of vacation does a person need? Woo! Get drunk tonight! Woo! And Friday I'll get my pay. What a country. I don't know if it deserves to exist anymore. Does it exist? Does America exist other than the minds of a few million people? Where is America? Certainly can't be found in the Congress. Ah! Turn it off already. Where is America? Tell me where America exists. Do you see it in Congress? Where do you see it? In the media? Where do you see it? In the churches? Where do you see it? In the synagogues? Where do you see it? In the mosques? Where do you see it? In the Buddhist temples? Where do you see it in the kindergartens? Where do you see it in the colleges? Where do you see it in the high schools? Where's America? Tell me where it is. I went to America, but I went home because it was closed. That's the new joke going around. You know, if you walk through the streets today on the last day of 07, what you hear in America is silence. While in Pakistan and the other crapistans around the world, the streets are filled with haters. Haters! Haters screaming for your blood! In Kenya, they're killing and burning each other. In the paradise of Europe, they're barricading themselves against the coming storm. While Sarkozy walks around his new supermodel, showing her off, forgetting what happened in France when the king showed off too much of his baubles. Sarkozy, they needed. The guy you thought was the real McCoy, now it turns out he's just a playboy. Walk down the sidewalks in an American neighborhood today, the cul-de-sacs are empty, except for the occasional stranger lurking around. Look through the windows of the houses, and what are you going to see? People sit nodding or napping on their couches in front of football games, where young men put on false shows of the masculinity that once found itself in every workplace and every household in America. But there they are, the supine Americans sitting in front of televisions, watching Viagra commercials and beer commercials and hair commercials and teeth commercials and ear commercials and ache commercials, and take a medication for this pain and take a medication for that pain and take 16 aspirin every 4 hours and 23 other ibuprofen 14 ever hours a day, and then wonder why your kidneys get blown out by the time you're 35. The world is on fire. The enemy is raging and bombing and cutting and killing. They take out world leaders at will, yet our leaders are immersed in a world of fantasy. They think that madmen can be cured with the panacea of democracy and money. They think that goodwill is enough to produce good results. They're focused on winning hearts and minds, while our Islamo-fascist enemy is focused on cutting heads and throats. They will continue living in their own dreamland, by the way, until what? Until when? The sound that we don't hear, that we need to hear, is the roar of angry American men who will not stop until the enemy is finally challenged by our deranged, drugged Congress. But for now, there is silence in the streets of America. Wake up, America. The new year is here, and the enemy within is also here. It's the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. I don't know how to direct the show today. What do you want me to do? Ask you some stupid things like the funniest stories of the year? the biggest stories of the year. Let's have a laugh fest and play Auld Lang Syne. Go ahead. Play Auld Lang Syne out there. See if you can dig it up out of the archives. Why is Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice not in an orange jumpsuit? She's failed at everything she's touched. It's unbelievable to me. She's the one who got Bhutto killed. She got Bhutto killed. She made her come in out of the cold in order to seek a coalition government, so they knocked her off. It's Condoleezza Rice. It's Condoleezza Rice and the State Department. Oh, who invented Auld Lang Syne? 1-800-449. I'm getting calls like from Yucca Puck America now. San Francisco, no call. New York, no call. Texas, no call. L.A., no call. Chicago, no call. Nothing. I'm getting like Yucca Puck, Ohio. You know, Schmendrick, Utah. Who else is going to be listening to the radio today? Normal people are in St. Bart's. Normal people are drunk or high on cocaine in St. Bart's with a supermodel. I'm here in front of a microphone, freezing my butt off. Which is how, by the way, how it has been for quite a while. Everyone knows that except Al Gore. Ooh, a storm raged through the Midwest today. Ooh, well, that must be global cooling. I mean, warming. Whatever it may be. Send the money for the carbon credits. Turn that off, would you please? So I told you that Gilligan's Island wouldn't sell outside of the west of the Hudson River. I mean, Giuliani. Giuliani lives in Gilligan's Island. He has a distorted vision of who he is, what he is, what people think of him. These people are all the same. They're narcissists. They're egomaniacs. They don't know where America is. They think that the heartland consists of people their PR agent told them is in Atlantic City somewhere gambling with a diabetes arm on the you know, it's crazy. The whole thing's nuts. They don't know what's going on outside of their own head. I told you Giuliani would not sell outside of west of the Hudson River. Everything I told you has come true so far about the election. But I haven't even begun to prognosticate. I will come next year, which is soon. I don't know when next year will be. Next year will be soon. 08's going to be a doozy. I feel this one in my blood. I feel that the Islamo-fascist is this close to taking over the West. I feel they can just blow the whole house down. We have the biggest pack of drugged-up frauds in the history of the United States at every lever of power. I've never seen anything like it. Tell me where there's a real staunch defender of this nation at some governmental level. Oh, I know they're down on the ground level. They're in Afghanistan. They're in Iraq. They're inside the agencies. They're trying to send up warning signals about Pearl Harbor, but no one's listening to them. It hits a certain Prozac ceiling inside Congress. That's what I just named it, the Prozac ceiling inside Congress. We're above a certain level. They're all on Prozac or worse, and they don't know. I hear no evil. I see no evil. I smell no evil. All aboard. So here I am. Here I am, all alone, sitting in front of a microphone. No one's listening. You got the biggest, I can't say the biggest anymore. There's no biggest. They're all the same. Huxtabee, you're gonna vote for Huxtabee now? This guy is the biggest fraud. You can't say the biggest fraud. They're all in the same league. Huxtabee now I'm supposed to vote for. 1,200 evangelicals were conned by the cross behind his head already, so he's winning. Now, I have to repeat what I've been saying for about 2 weeks now. What kind of nation uses a 19th century model of primaries for the 21st century? What kind of nation, but a nation of idiots, would rely upon Iowa, where 12 corn farmers sitting on a cold chair are going to determine the outcome of the election? You may as well hold a primary. You may as well hold a primary in a housing project in the Bronx. You'd get a better read of who's going to win the election than amongst 8 corn farmers in Iowa. Now, you're still relying on New Hampshire, where the Minutemen originated? If I remember my high school history, and I may or may not have it right. If I'm not mistaken, that used to be a bedrock of New England. Now it's a state filled with who? Who's there? Who lives in New Hampshire but tax dodgers, drunks, and coupon clippers? There's no one left. Why would you rely upon 19th century models for a primary of predictability? When they don't represent America anymore, how in the world can you say that Iowa or New Hampshire represent what's going to happen in America? Can anyone explain to me why we're going along with this fraud? I don't understand it. I don't go along with it. You can't drag me along with this insanity. As I say, you want to run a poll, run a poll in a Hispanic housing project in the South Bronx. Run a poll in Los Angeles in the new Azteca. Go ahead. Go run a poll down in the new Azteca, the new land of the Mayan, the Mayan Empire in the Southland, and you'll get a predictor of who's going to win the election. So that's why I came in here. I came in today because, truthfully, it's very depressing. The landscape's horrendous. The worst thing that ever happened to America was George Bush. There is no question in my mind he's a walking disaster. There's not one thing the man did that was good. There is one thing. He kept taxes arbitrarily low, which is good. Other than that, I can't think of anything he did that's good. Can you? Can you name one thing that George Bush did that's good? And you say, well, why are you Bush bashing? Well, the answer is because the man stupefies me in his inability to run a country correctly. You say, well, where are you going to start your focus on? Well, let's start with a simple case, Texas. Two Border Patrol agents apprehend a Mexican drug dealer. They shoot him in the butt. They're in jail for 11 years. The Mexican drug dealer was given immunity to testify against them. 100 congressmen have sent a letter to the president saying, this is a miscarriage of justice. Democrats, Republicans, they got off the Prozac for 30 minutes and wrote something that had something to do with other than money for them. And they said, this is a miscarriage of justice. Grant them amnesty. Bush says, no, won't even comment on it. Can anyone explain that to me? Yes, say the superhighways running through America with unmarked trucks. Say the superhighways that run from Mexico to Canada that no one can look in. You get the picture? You get the whole package? Does it come together for you? Now let's look at the Islamo-fascist threat together. Why is the war on terror suddenly over? Can anyone answer that question? When did the war on terror begin and when did it end exactly? And why do we need the Department of Homeland Security if they don't even mention who we're fighting? Who's the enemy? Who is the enemy of America? Is it the right wing? Is it the left wing? Who is it? Who is Homeland Security focusing on? What are they doing for the trillions of dollars that they get, or God knows, the black budgets that they must have? Are they doing anything against the front groups for the Islamo-fascist, against the Islamo-fascist front groups in this country? What have they done recently to protect us from a coming attack? Does anyone know? Other than passing child pornography back and forth to each other on black computers. I'll be right back. Savage.
Tried to interview Chelsea Clinton?
Not really much. She just said she really couldn't talk to the press, but she was extremely
This is what
nice.
Fox News has become under Rupert Murdoch. They're interviewing a 9-year-old reporter.
You didn't mind.
This is what Fox News... Okay, thank you very much. This is what they have a news person named Bridget Quinn on December 31st, 2007, interviewing a 9-year-old girl. Who tried to interview Chelsea Clinton the question, but was informed by their former first daughter that Clinton does not talk to the press. This became a news story now for the new Fox News. The reliable, we report, you decide. That's all. Well, since they're not reporting, there's nothing to decide on. That's the new game in town. As for my people, a babe is their master and women rule over them. Oh, my people, that lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of thy paths. That comes from Isaiah. That's Isaiah 12 from the Jewish Bible or the Old Testament. As for my people, a babe is their master, and women rule over them. Oh, my people, they that lead thee cause thee to err and destroy the way of thy paths. That's all in Isaiah 12. So, you know, things change and they don't change. Technologically, we change. But if you look at us biologically, we're no different than some would say the primitive human, but I would go back further than that, the Neolithic man and us. And I mean, biologically, we're almost the same as the Neolithics. Of course, we change in style, but do we change inside? I don't know that things really change. I know that nations have come and nations have gone, and I know that we're a relatively young nation, and I know that right now this nation is in very deep trouble, and I realize that we don't have the leader that we're looking for, and there is no leader on the horizon. You got one shill after another or one huckster after another, and no one knows which way to turn. It's funny, last night I had a dream that I was in a room with McCain and his wife. It was a stunning dream, now that I think about it. It was so real. It was one of those, like, real dreams that you're there. And they were very friendly with Cindy McCain and John McCain. Now, I'm not supporting John McCain, by the way, because He worked for Amnesty, even though he says he didn't. Remember, it was John McCain. It was the McCain-Kennedy amnesty bill. Make no mistake about it. And now poor McCain thinks that we're so stupid that we don't remember this. I mean, we do remember it, John. You blew it. You're unreliable. You blew it, man. Here's McCain in clip 18 denying he ever supported amnesty. Listen to 18.
The fact is that I've never supported amnesty. Secretary Chertoff made it very clear, and I did too, that there's too many people in this country illegally.
All right, let's stop right here. Wrong. I'm sorry, John. Sorry. You know, I'm sorry. You did support amnesty. That's what the McCain-Kennedy bill was, an amnesty bill. So the fact of the matter is that's why you went down in the polls. It's why you're not going to get reelected as a senator in Arizona. I have nothing in this one way or the other. I'm not voting for against you, for you. But last night I dreamed that I was in a room with John McCain and Cindy McCain. It was the most amazing dream. I don't remember the details. Sometimes I wish I had a wire in my head connected to a VCR that could record dreams. I've been dreaming about this all my life. I've had a wish all my life of inventing a device that you can put on at night, because I would like to watch the replays in the morning of my dreams. I dream in Technicolor. B, there's entire dialogues, sometimes in foreign languages, that I don't even speak. How does that happen? How can I dream in a foreign language that I don't speak and yet I understand it? Maybe I watch too many movies. In any case, I was in a room with McCain and the wife, and it was friendly. But I had to tell him, look, you supported amnesty. I can't support you. You're nice people, but you're not qualified to be the president because you don't have the interests of America, the best interests of this country at heart. You're sold out to some powers that we don't understand. I mean, we remember these things. That's what the dream was, something along those lines. I guess I was groping. I was like subconsciously, you know, hoping there was somebody out there I could vote for. Thus far, I don't know who it is. Let's put an X to who it isn't. We know it's not Hillary nor Obama. We know they would be an abomination for the future of America. And I keep asking the same question about this invention, Obama, the corrupt ward politician from the suburbs of Chicago. He turned him in already into some saint. They think they invented him yesterday. The guy's been working the back wards of Chicago for a long time. How do you think he got where he is? Trading, okay? Buying and selling favors, man. He's an assemblyman originally from Chicago. Why can't you talk about his Muslim father and grandfather? Oh, welcome back to the Savage Nation. So you got Obama from Crook County, Illinois. You got Giuliani from the Waldorf Astoria. You got Huckstaby from Clinton's home state. I mean, you don't know which way to turn anymore. You got McCain from Mexico. It doesn't end. It doesn't end. I see a 55-year-old orangutan died in a Miami Zoo. There goes one more Democrat voter. I hope they take Nanja off the roll down there in Palm County. There's one less vote for the Marxists now. Poor old Sumatran orangutan named Nanja. I always liked those animals. I remember when I was a young biology student, and I was, a follower of Darwin and Alfred Russell Wallace. I'm a Wallace guy, by the way, not a Darwin guy. Wallace was they're both equally brilliant men, but Wallace got there first, but he deferred to the gentleman Darwin, because he felt that he should, because he was only the son of a Hozier, you know, Wallace, Alfred Russell Wallace. He actually discovered the idea of evolution prior to Darwin. I know this is like inflammatory words to people who, you know, haven't heard of the Scopes monkey trial. But, you know, they used to go to Borneo and like kill these poor creatures. I have a real sympathy for simians. How could you like hate a simian? You ever meet a simian you hated? They don't bother anybody. They eat bananas. They eat leaves. They don't need vitamin C because they make their own. Great creatures. Maybe we need to devolve. Maybe if man devolved, it would be a better world. Did you ever think of that one? That's an interesting thought. Let's say this was a graduate seminar in evolutionary biology or de-evolutionary biology. And just for the fun of it, your professor said to you, imagine a world where man devolved down to the level of an ape. Would it be a better world or a worse world? Just think about it. First of all, we wouldn't need vitamin C because I told you, man is one of the few animals on Earth who needs external vitamin C for sources of vitamin C because most all other animals make as much as they need. They synthesize it from starter chemicals. So that's why we need supplemental vitamin C in our diet. And you can't get enough from orange juice, by the way. But you do so at your own risk if you want to believe you get enough from orange juice. Go ahead. Go believe old Doc Antibiotic there. Put people on antibiotics and don't tell them to take acidophilus, and then they get a vaginal infection. Then they come back and the quack sends them to a doctor to treat that. Then that quack puts them on another series of drugs, which destroy another round of the immune system. And then that quack sends them to another one. I don't mind using an antibiotic, but for God's sakes, tell people to take acidophilus while you're taking an antibiotic. Most doctors don't know what you're talking about. I think you're talking about LSD. If you said to the average MD, make sure you put your patients on acidophilus when you put them on powerful antibiotics, they say, well, we don't put them on LSD. This is like an injury. It's like not even a joke. It's pathetic. The ignorance out there, the ignorance. I have to straighten it all out. That's my job. I told you it's my job. I'm good on most topics. I'm not good on baseball. I'm not good on basketball. I'm not good on football. I'm not good on hockey. But I'm good on sex and love, children, politics, philosophy, food, restaurants, the future, income tax, fashion. Not good on golf. I'm good on world affairs, good on alternative medicine. I'm good on some music. I'm good on dogs, not good on cats. I'm good on religion. I'm good on real estate. I'm good on wine. I'm good on beer. I'm good on the family. I'm good on the law. I'm good on TV shows. I'm good on recipes. I'm good on pop psychiatry. I'm good on rumors. I'm good on tradition. I'm good on books. I'm good on art. But that's it. I mean, that's why the show is fun for me, because I get a chance to vent. But, you know, there's a lot of serious work that has to be done in 08. Whoa, it's going to be a big one. We know it. We feel it in our blood. The enemy is emboldened. We lost in Afghanistan because we won't use the power that we have again. We're only willing to use Mrs. Smith's brave son, as in Iraq. Send Mrs. Smith's son into the alleyway to get shot in the face so he can come home and have a plastic leg. And then prosecute anyone who blasts first and asks questions later. Okay, put him on. Spend $63 million to court-martial a Marine who does his job. Okay? You see, it's the only good Marine to the administration is someone with a plastic leg or in a box. WOR, Frank, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Dr. Savage, you forgot you're good at rap, too, rap songs.
In the right mood.
I was just wondering what your New Year's resolution is going to be.
To not make any. And the reason I'm not going to make any resolutions is because what can I resolve that's not going to, like, be, you know, worthless 2 days later? What do you mean? Like, people make, like, on like today they say, I'm not going to do this or I am going to do that? Yeah, I never lived up to any of those resolutions. I just basically keep going along in life and do things. Do you have a resolution? What's yours?
Hoping that you run for president.
That's no, can't happen. I value my sanity too much. Thanks for the call. But you know something? This keeps up. I'm actually getting angrier by the day. Could they write me in? Could I decide to just leave radio and say, write me in, goodbye? Because I'll tell you something right now. Here you got a guy in New York, this mayor, another one, out of touch with reality. A billionaire buys the mayorship. Admittedly, the city's doing well. Give him credit for that. As far as west of the Hudson River, lower than Giuliani. West of the Hudson River, Bloomberg has as much power as a Tom McCann shoe. I don't know how I put that two together, but he looks like a Tom McCann wearer when he was a youth. Doesn't he look like he would have worn wingtips at, like, Yale? He would have had, like, a wingtip shoe. You know, I never owned a wingtip in my life. No, lie. I did once. I had one for a month. I went through a Brooks Brothers phase. I tried to, like, be Anglo. I tried to, you know, look British. Didn't work for me. Didn't work at all. Got, like, the Brooks Brothers suit and the wingtip. Ugh, what a horrible outfit. Anyone who had to wear that all of their life, they're usually crippled by 40, mentally, physically, and spiritually. But why would Bloomberg run? What is this man thinking? Who's advising him? Nowhere in America, but perhaps in New York, maybe, he has popularity. Outside of New York, no one heard of him. This is what the world needs, is another liberal New York mayor to run for office. That's just what everyone wants. I don't get it. Well, it's ego. It's all ego. That's all. I understand ego. I'm an egomaniac. We all are. Don't make any mistake about it. Anybody in the radio or TV world is an egomaniac, or they wouldn't be in this business. I mean, let's clear the air. But then there are, you know, varieties thereof. There are egomaniacs who don't make any sense, and there are egomaniacs who make great sense. So it doesn't matter whether you have a large ego or you're a narcissist. What matters is, do you make sense or not? That's all that matters. Anybody in the public eye is a narcissist and an egomaniac. I mean, let's be clear about it. Did you have a good vacation? I had a vacation. Like, my vacation was work. I wasn't on the radio, but it was like family stuff. Like working out future plans of action. Not only in my lawsuit against CAIR, who, as you well know, tried to destroy my radio career thus far, has failed. Now it's my turn. And once we get to court, we'll find out what's what and who's who and just exactly who funds them and their connections, if any, to this very strange group created by Hillary Clinton called Media Matters. Now, we don't know if CAIR is connected to Media Matters, but I did so much investigation on this. And there's a guy named David Brock, and he created a group called Media Matters for America, a 501c4 nonprofit corporation. And what they want to do is to destroy conservative talk radio in the United States of America. What's interesting to me is that when you look into Media Matters and you look at their tax forms, which we have, which we're going to publish on my website in the coming few days or weeks, it's a very strange phenomenon to believe that somebody can set out to destroy conservative talk radio and say so openly and retain their nonprofit status. Are you aware of the fact that this do-gooder David Brock, who was after Michael Savage and other conservatives in the media, earned $240,000 for his work in the year 2005? We're still waiting for the tax forms for 06 and 07. He's out to get Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, Savage, O'Reilly, I guess anybody he doesn't like. He's made himself into the Goebbels of the left. Now, we want to know where he got $8 million from last year. We're still trying to find out where Media Matters for America received its money from. And once we find that out, we're going to try to investigate or have the IRS investigate their tax status. What's odd about this guy, David Brock, who created Media Matters, is that after declaring he was a homosexual, he claimed that he became a liberal. And now he works to, quote, dismantle the conservative media machine. It's very interesting how these things work. His secretary is a man named Will Lippincott. His treasurer is Peter D. Rosenstein. Look them all up. Very interesting. They're all part of the same cabal. His COO is Darren Bodner. His editorial director is Marsha Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. His senior advisor is Jameson W. Foser. His communication strategist is a man named Dennis Yedwab. A senior fellow is Paul Waldman. And what's interesting to me is that their tactics at Media Matters are almost identical to the tactics used in Stalinist Russia. And the connection to Hillary Clinton is astonishing because she admits she created it. I found a publication on Media Matters out to destroy me and others in the media who tell you the truth on a daily basis called Gotham. Well, it was in World News. I don't know how to even give you the website to go to. I'll have to put it up on my website. These people are absolutely brilliant. But they wrote this. They said, "We believe Media Matters has a socialist, liberal, almost military intelligence modus operandi established for the purpose of destroying their enemy, America as we know it, freedom of speech and certain thought." Can you believe this? And they investigated Media Matters in great detail. Direct public support, $8.4 million. David Brock. Staff advisors, Eric Altman, professor of English and journalism at Brooklyn College, which is an oxymoron. Benjamin Armbruster. Duncan Black. Max Blumenthal. Darren Bodner. Eric Bollert. David Brock. Joseph Brown. Eric Burns. Nicole Casta. Ryan whatever, Justin Coley. There's a whole list here. You should see this list of people. Carl Frisch used to work for Representative Louise Slaughter, Democrat, New York. Most of these people are deep operatives of the Democrat Party, incidentally, which makes their nonprofit status questionable at the very least. Now, if you think I'm inventing my statements, I'm going to play for you right now a soundbite which confirms that Hillary Clinton proudly takes credit for having created this Stalinist group, Media Matters for America. Play Hillary Clinton. Go ahead.
I only wish that we had this active and fighting a blogosphere about 15 years ago, because we have, you know, certainly suffered over the last years from a real imbalance in the political world in our country. But we are righting that balance. We're lefting that balance. I'm not sure which. And we are certainly better prepared and more focused on, you know, taking our arguments and making them effective and disseminating them widely and really putting together a network in the blogosphere, in a lot of the new progressive infrastructure, institutions that I helped to start and support, like Media Matters and Center for American Progress.
Okay, so let's pause right there. So Media Matters was started by Hillary Clinton. She just said so. It's a scalpel of the Clinton machine. Their surgeons in the case of Don Imus were Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. Those were the surgeons used by the Democrat hit machine. If you remember the Duke rape case, the fake rape case, I was the first one out of the box within days to tell you it stank, that the Durham dirtbag should be the one going to prison, and that the prosecutor should be in jail. Remember that? And yet this strange, stinking group, Media Matters, defended both the accuser, Crystal Gayle Magnum, who actually was not raped, and they defended the prosecutor, Mike Nifong, against attacks by Michael Savage. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm warning you right now, 2008 is going to be a very, very big year, and I'll be right back. Savage. So in 2008, we're going to take a spotlight to Media Matters. We're going to expose the salaries, the exorbitant salaries they are paying themselves, their connections to the radical homosexual mafia in this country, and how they are using Soviet-style tactics to try to destroy truth-sayers such as myself. And the techniques that they use, as I say, are right out of Stalinist Russia, yet they pose as progressives, which is amazing to me, how they get away with it. In 2004, the New York Times reported that Media Matters received $2 million in donations from wealthy liberals and was developed with help from the newly formed Center for American Progress. Listen to this. Its president and CEO, none other than John Podesta, former chief of staff to President Bill Clinton. So what I'm telling you is that these groups that pose as one thing are really fronts for Hillary Clinton and the hate machine of the Democrat Party. And just as Chavez, or similar to the way Chavez did it down in his country, he just blew up the stations or took them off the air. These people simply try to do it through hate and lies. Incidentally, well, I'm going to save all of this. There's too much to do today. I'm going to give you the names of those who have given them money, including Peter B. Lewis, the chairman of Progressive Insurance Companies. There are other donors, and you're going to find out who they are, where they came from, the New Democratic Network, including Robert J. Shapiro, economic advisor in Governor Bill Clinton's presidential campaign, senior economic advisor to Vice President Al Gore and Senator John Kerry. So if you look very carefully, you find out that this group is a front group for the Democrat hate machine. And we're going to fight back, and we're going to fight by trying to have their tax status revoked, because they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, in my opinion. And we're going to demand that a Republican step forth, shake off the Prozac, and do what we pay them to do, which is conduct an investigation of groups like this, who are bringing us down to the level of the ex-Soviet Union, while these fraudulent Republicans do nothing but shill for big corporations. Let them do something for us. You're telling me the Republicans are any different than the Democrats? Then how come the Islamo-fascists are so deeply entrenched with front groups like CARE in this country? How come nobody's investigated CAIR, even though there are tons and tons and boxes of papers connecting them to some very dangerous people? How come not one congressman, so-called, stepped forward when Michael Savage's show was attacked by CARE? How come not one congressman has stepped forth to defend Limbaugh and O'Reilly and the others? Yeah, I'll mention their names. I'm not afraid to mention their names. Maybe they're afraid to mention my name. I got nothing to lose by mentioning theirs. We're all part of the same constellation. And either we all stand together or we're all going to fall together. They don't know that yet. They don't know that yet because to them it's all a show. They don't understand what really is at stake. They sound as though they know what's at stake. And maybe somewhere inside they do. But I'm afraid they don't really know what's at stake. But it's too much for today. This is like a December 31st, a no rating thing, you know. I'm saving all of this stuff on Media Matters and on CAIR for when everyone's back, which is really, I'll tell you the truth, this country's like on a one-month jag. Like 1 month, you literally could blow the country over with a puff. I don't know who's anywhere. The country could be blown over like with one big, like Wolf could come in and blow it over with a puff. I'm surprised we're still standing. Where is everybody? Everyone's like on a drunk. A month, a one-month drunk, a nation of drunks and brigands for a month. Around January 15th, they creep back to a job, and they take a look at their horrendously meaningless lives. They start buying things around Thanksgiving. Mall, they go to the mall, buy this for Sally, and that for Eddie, and that for Eddie, and that for Joey, and that for Johnny, and that for Billy. No one knows what to do with it, so they return it on December 26th. Then they return it, or they send it to someone they really don't like very much, the stuff they got. On the 25th, they send the following year, or some other holiday, someone died, they send it to the niece. I don't know why they're going to the mall. I couldn't drive in the car for the last day. They're still going to the mall. The holiday's over. They're back there again. They're jammed up like they're going. I don't know what they do there. What do? They buy stuff, then they return stuff. Then some idiots actually go there and buy things that are cheap after the holidays and put it away for next year like chipmunks. Putting away nuts for next year, the whole thing makes no sense to me. Is that America? Am I not an American because I don't participate in this? Am I not an American because it doesn't move me? Or is there something wrong with this picture, this consumerism?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Today's positive report card shows children do learn when standards are high and results are measured. And so my call to the Congress is don't water down this good law. Don't go backwards when it comes to educational excellence.
If our belief is that this war should stop today, we cower as you point your fingers telling us to support our troops. Will you and the smarmy pundits in your pocket, those who bathe in the moisture of your soiled and blood-soaked underwear and take that noise and shut it.
I don't feel no ways tired. Too far. Where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy. I don't believe he brought me this far to leave me.
I don't know. I don't know who's the bigger nut. I just don't know anymore. Soiled, bloody underwear, Sean Penn. I mean, I think that was the trigger for the divorce. You never know. I mean, with families, it's always over one thing or another. It's either a woman, another, or money. That's what it is. It's always over either money or another, you know, a man, a girl, a boy. But with him, it could be politics. I mean, I think the bloody underwear thing could have been the turning point in that marriage. But then you got George Bush saying children do learn if we give them the proper education. And then we got Hillary Clinton going through the scales of the, like a psycho, like almost, you know, like speaking in tongues. By the way, if God forbid Hillary becomes president, who will be the first lady? That's what I don't understand. Ann Lewis, Janet Reno, Donna Shalala, who will it be? Play Blue Monday, will you? Then I'll get ready for the show. I'm not ready yet. I don't even know why I'm here. I wonder what am I doing here? Everyone's on vacation. Where's O'Reilly? In Ireland? Golfing in Ireland? What do they do on vacation? How do you do it if you're in this business? You're fooling yourself. You're not on vacation. You know you're dying to be on the air. Yeah, you're doing it for the family. They really love having you around. Mommy, why doesn't Daddy come up from the computer? Leave him alone. It's his job. Oh, my God, I came into the office today. Wow. It's dead out there. It's like this is ghost town. I go to a party tonight. Party. Get a hat, a pointy hat. I'm not even going to drink. Saturday morning. They released Sarah Jane Moore. Turn that off. Yesterday, they released Sarah Jane Moore, arrested in 1975, who attempted to assassinate President Ford. Why is she out of jail? Like the other one, Fromm, Squeaky Fromm, is still in jail. She tried to kill Ford. She's still away. Why do you let this nut out? She's in a mental hospital since 75. Now she's cured? Maybe she'll go on Oprah. Maybe they'll put her on Oprah tomorrow. No, actually, she could work as a campaign manager for the Hillary Clinton campaign. Perfect. Sarah Jane Moore. I'd like to introduce the latest member of our campaign committee, Sarah Jane Moore. Woman escorted off bus for reading Bible aloud. Yep, that's right. Fort Worth, Texas. Threw her off the bus because she was reading a Bible to her grandchild too loud. Whew, what a world. But the jihadists can scream anything they want on a bus, huh? That's the country today that you let happen? Many other stories. I'm not going to bore you with them. 39 million people voted for me on the Savage website. This is getting frightening. If Bloomberg ran, he'd probably get 300 votes west of the Hudson River. He'd get 300 votes in Austin, 1,200 votes in the Castro District of San Francisco, 900 votes in Los Angeles and West Hollywood. But what is this man thinking here? I don't get it. They're getting me really angry that a guy like that, I could get at least, my guess, if I really did it. Let's say I said, okay, I'm leaving radio, and that's it. I can't take it anymore. I know I can't win, but I'm going to shake up the campaign. I'm going out there. I'm going to debate them all, and I'm going to really give it to them. And I'm not going to sit there like a dunce and not say a word. I'll interrupt them. I will be a wild man if they let me near them. I will do everything they fear and more. I would suggest I could get at least 10 million to maybe 20 million votes, maybe more, which could change the course of American history, which is why I'm not going to do it. The reason I'm not going to do it is because I want you to see exactly what the political system is, what it's become. That one unqualified shill after another says they're going to lead this country in a time like this. It's unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable to me. How much worse it can get? You'll see. Don't worry. You'll see real soon. Now, how much worse does it get when you turn to the media like Fox News, which admittedly is better politically than CNN? It is. You know, squeaky little bit better. They interview a 9-year-old reporter from the fourth grade and ask her a question. That's what passes for news today? I couldn't believe what I was watching. They make that into a story. Then you got Mike Huckstervey. He says he's not going to run attack ads on Romney, and he shows the ad to the reporters. That's why I call him Huckstervey. He'll be forgotten. He'll be forgotten, believe me. Believe me, he'll be forgotten like yesterday's snow. What about Fred Thompson? Where did he go? I don't think he really was in it for that. I don't know why. I mean, he actually stands for good things, but he can't win. There's something about him that's a little – how can I put it without being insulting? I'm trying not to be insulting about Fred Thompson. I called him a glue horse once. I take it back. Okay, he's not a glue horse, but there's something of the glue horse about him that indicates to me that he's in it only for the last hurrah, so to speak. John McCain, forget about it. I don't think this guy, when this is all over, I don't think he's going to win re-election in Arizona as a senator. Everyone knows he was the McCain-Kennedy bill. People are not that stupid, John. You know, you're still a healthy man yet. Your family's got good genes. I mean, you could do something other than politics. I don't know. You could teach flight training, something. You could run a flight school in Arizona because I can't run an Oldsmobile dealership down there anymore. They're not buying Oldsmobiles in Arizona. He wouldn't take on a Toyota dealership. It would be seen as unpatriotic. I don't know, something. He could go to work for Lockheed Martin. That's respectable in his later years. Anything but Dubai, please, John, whatever you do, don't take that money from the Middle East. Whatever you do, please, I beg you. Don't go by the way of your friend Bob Dole and Madeleine Albright and take that tainted Middle Eastern money. Please, don't. I think they own half of them, if not more. That's why suddenly the war on terror is over. They bought them off one at a time, like tricks down on the cheapest street in town. One after the other, they built a library here. And then they said, when you're out, don't worry, you come to work for us. We need a good caddy to carry our bags. You'll get $3 million a year to carry a bag. No kidding, yeah, good. And that's it. So the Senate already is muted. There's no war on terror anymore. It's over. So what are they going to do with the infrastructure? Turn it on us. That's all. If the war on terror is over, but we haven't dismantled the infrastructure that was conducting the war on terror, notably the Department of Homeland Security, what are you going to do with that infrastructure? Naturally, turn it on America, on the American citizen himself. In between mailing child porn pictures to each other, they can start snooping on us a little bit better than they're already doing. Luckily, I have nothing to hide. I hope you don't either. So there it is. Yeah, it's going to be a great year, O.A. Can you believe there's going to be an election? Thank God, after a five-year... This has gone on forever. I've never seen anything like this. Never in history has there been a campaign that was so endless. And why? I told you why for over a year now. Because voter turnout is at an all-time low. Why is voter turnout at an all-time low? Because you know that they're all shills. And you know that there's not a real leader amongst them. So what they did was they got together, the Democrats, the Republicans, and they said, look, we got to, you know, drum up business, like an Academy Awards. We got to start earlier. They got some PR guy. Okay, we'll start how much earlier? I don't know, 2 years out of the election. And we'll have an endless campaign. It'll be like bread and circuses forever. There will always be a campaign in America. And the minute someone's elected, we'll start on the next campaign. Let them think it's really a participatory democracy. And there will never be an actual discussion of anything important. It will all be around the topic. It won't be like the British parliamentary system, where they actually look each other in the eye and they attack each other verbally. Now, George Bush, as you know, wouldn't have gone past, let's say, a high school gym teacher if that was the system in America. And I'm nothing against high school nor gym teachers. But let's face it, anyone who says children do learn if you give them the right tools, I don't think would have made it through a debate if they had that kind of system, you know. Could you play music for me? I don't know what I want to do today. I'm not ready. I'm not even – am I on the air here? Was any of this – did it go out? Beowulf, did any of this go out on the air? I don't even know if the – oh, yeah, the microphone was on. I didn't even know. I'm just thinking out loud here. Why is Condoleezza Rice not back at Stanford running the library? She's failed in the war on terror. She just got Budo killed. She failed to act to prevent the major terrorist assaults on American soil. She doesn't believe there are any rogue states. She has almost destroyed Israel. I never saw anything like this. She is unbelievable. The woman has destroyed everything she's touched. But, of course, that's par for the course for a Secretary of State. She's sort of like Madeleine Albright. She got beautiful. Even the Daily Kos is saying that Rice got Budo killed. Look at this. The left and right are agreeing on this. This is unbelievable. They're saying she should go. They're right. They're 100% right. Of course, they listened to me first. I was the first one to say it. It's like saying even they. They listened to me, so they're now since they're now no longer they. The reason that they've all tanked, all these left-wing groups, is because Hillary used them. And she realized it's bad for her campaign to be associated with these whack jobs, so she's ditched them. Now they have nothing to do, so they're listening to me and publishing what I say. And they still think that they're liberals. Okay, what do you want me to say? Dr. Condoleezza Rice, they write, wants a limp academic. I almost said a limp appendectomy. I'm reading from Dr. Condoleezza Rice wants a limp academic and President Bush sycophant. After suffering personal ignominy and public ridicule for her strangely dyslexic command of her portfolios. Nah, this is already nowhere. Who wrote this garbage? Daily Kos. But she did get Budo knocked off. They came up with the whole thing, put on the scarf and come out of hiding. And you'll form a coalition. Where did they come up with this idea that if... Remember they started this campaign against Musharraf? He should take his uniform off? What does that have to do with anything? They only respect strong men in Pakistan. What do you mean take his uniform off? What'd that have to do with anything? What, you wanted like the symbol of democracy in a crazy land like Pakistan? By the way, the culprit of all of this violence over there is Mahatma Gandhi. I'm going to tell you more about it when I come back. I've been thinking about this over the weekend, pondering, digging, thinking. And most of you don't know history, of course. I don't blame you. I blame the media more than I blame the educational system. But that's where you rely upon me. But Pakistan, you see, didn't exist until it was created by Mahatma Gandhi. It was carved out of a piece of India so that the Muslims could have their own homeland, you see, on the assumption that once the Muslims had their own homeland, peace would reign on Earth. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I think I'm going to talk about wine and dogs for a while. I think I'm tired of politics. Let's go into a segment. So let's see. Over the vacation, I spent some time in someone's house where I drank expensive wines. Now, in the winter, as I've told you, my blood changes. I'm sure there's a scientific explanation for this. I don't know where to find it in any of the books of physiology, but I'm sure of it anyway because I'm very much in touch with my body and having studied a little bit on the subject. I can tell you that the human body changes according to climate. So it gets nasty and cold, and I can drink red wine. In the summer, I can puke if you put it near my nose. I can't have it. I can't have it near me. Can't touch it. Okay? Come the winter, I love red wine. So it's cold. So we said, a guy has a wine room, and he's really into wine. So we're trying different wines. Now, I don't ask him how much he paid. I know they were very expensive, every one of them. The French, I'll tell you the truth, have destroyed their industry because what happened was Bordeaux wines, in my opinion, I used to drink them when I was very young. I don't mean 10. I'm not French. When I was like a young teacher in New York, one of the pleasures I had was after work in Manhattan, I would go over to a small French restaurant that's been destroyed. I don't know where it is today. Like a working class, but really nice place and get a bottle of Saint-Emilion and eat dinner. And I thought I was happy. It was the last time I was happy, I think, in my life was when I was like 23, eating a meal by myself and having a bottle of wine and reading a paper. Whatever I did, I like to be alone. I'm still a loner, by the way, which is why I'm great in radio, because it's in essence, radio is a monologue artist's dream. There's no one around. There's no script to read. I'm not like Letterman, okay? Dunce, bucktooth dunce, Leno. Should have been a mechanic, would have been happier. They can't talk unless they have someone smarter writing for them. You can imagine they're not on the air because someone didn't. What Letterman said last night. Again, PR agency. It was so brilliant. Idiocy. The whole thing's idiocy. It's like politics, the whole deal. So anyways, I'm drinking the wine. I used to like Saint-Emilion. Now, I know wines going back to then. It's a long time ago. So therefore, I can tell you the arc of what happened to French wines. They started copying California red wines, which has a cherry juice-like taste to it, which I don't like. You open up, I don't care how much it costs. I've had all of them, $100, $125. This one's great, that one's great. They taste like cherry juice with alcohol, like fermented cherry juice. I don't like cherry juice and alcohol. I like wine. Wine isn't supposed to hit you like you're drinking cherry juice, right? So I'm sorry. I stopped drinking California red wines for that reason. It was too much like cherry juice. Even the cabs, boom. So now what happened with the Bordeaux is they all started copying the California wines, which were getting great ratings and blind tests. Now, why were the California wines suddenly blind testing better than the French Bordeaux? Because the tasters' tastes had changed. They grew up on soda pop. They grew up on television. They grew up on Jell-O. And consequently, they have no taste whatsoever, but they think because they're in a wine business, they automatically have taste. So they say, oh, this one tastes good because it tastes like cherry juice. So now the French guys started to modify the Bordeaux to taste like California wines that tasted like cherry juice. So now I'm going to get to the point of the story. Since I'm talking about wine and talking about my preference. I opened up a bottle of Gaja, Italian wine. It's expensive. It really is. I don't know what the heck, $350 a bottle, $250. I don't know what it was. And I could not believe the difference in taste between the Italian red Gaja. This is the name of the vintner, by the way, the winemaker's name, Angelo Gaja. This tasted like red wine used to taste to me. So apparently the Italians haven't been swept up in the cherry juice fantasy of California reds. I loved it. I really liked that wine. It's funny, though. I drink a little bit of it for a few days. I don't even want anything at all. And tonight, out of spite, I'm not going to drink anything at all, nothing. I'm drinking club soda for New Year's Eve. I can't wait. I'm sitting here grimly with white knuckle waiting for the night to be over. I don't want to drink at all. I don't want to drink what I'm supposed to drink. Idiots. New Year's Eve with the horn running in the street like an idiot. What does it mean to them? They'll be the same idiot tomorrow that they were today. You could say 2007 was the year newspapers finally basically died. I mean, Murdoch took over the Wall Street Journal. You know that that's the end of the great institution of the Wall Street Journal. Although I basically canceled my subscription a long while ago. They tilted so far to the left that I couldn't read it anymore. The Wall Street Journal had become almost like the San Francisco Chronicle in terms of its editorial viewpoints. I couldn't take it. I don't know what happened to it. Investors Business Daily is still rational, thank God, until it'll be taken over by Murdoch. Los Angeles, Pat, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael, a couple minutes. You're talking about the Gaia wine that you had last night. Interesting point. If you like those Nebbiolos, it's funny. I argue with my wife all the time because she always likes to buy the California wines, and I always have the Italian, buy the Italian ones. She says it's just because I'm Italian, but I said, no, I like the, you know, the big earthy ones, not the big fruit bombs. But
exactly. Well, you are apparently in the wine business by what I'm reading on the screen. But am I right about that cherry flavor in California wines?
Oh, I can't stand it. I call them fruit bombs, and they are just big overtones of oak, and I really don't enjoy them except for a couple ones.
But, yeah, but am I right in saying that this taste in wines was altered by kids who grew up on soda pop and then suddenly went into the wine world about 15 years ago?
Yeah, I don't know what the actual progression was in California that got them being so fruity, because even the older French wines were a lot earthier and had like
exactly you know, when I used to drink that Sante Miglione, and it was not expensive when I was younger, you know, I could afford it. It was tannicky. I particularly described it as a very tannicky, dry taste with almost no fruit in it. And today you open up a French wine, I really don't care how much it costs, it's the same fruity bomb that I can't drink it. That's what I was getting at, because they modified their winemaking to match the California fruit taste. But do you know the wine I mentioned, Gaia? Do you know that particular one?
Oh, I know it well. It's awesome. Do you remember which one it was? Was it the Sori San Tobin, Sori San Lorenzo, the straight?
It was the Sori San Lorenzo.
Yeah.
And Sori means a dry hillside, doesn't it? Dry, sunny hillside, the word Sori.
Yeah, all his labels have the particular hillside where it was.
Right. And so San Lorenzo was named for one of his relatives. He's a winemaker, apparently. What region of Italy is he from?
That is Lange. It's, you know, Piedmont.
Oh, it's a Piemonte. Well, anyway, it was a new world for me. You know, I'm not into expensive wines. I'm basically a beer drinker, some vodka. That's about it. I've given up on wine. But in the winter, as I say, I don't like cold beverages. So I shift to red wine because I can't drink the other stuff. It's just too cold, right? And this time you had to drink anything cold, you know. So the red wine's really great. But you can only buy six bottles of this at a time. It's like, you know, like they'll only sell you six or eight bottles if you can find it at all. Anyway, neither here nor there. Thanks for the call. I know I was right on that. See, I told you I'm right on so many things. This shows you a man who understands wine in this way, the way I do. Don't you understand how I understand everything else? It's like food itself. I don't eat or drink advertising. I eat or drink food and beverage. Most people go to a restaurant because they heard it's good. Or they go to you ever hear people at these, you turn on HBO, they have so-called comedians. They're terrible. All the same dreck. Garbage. You know, not funny. Zero humor there. And when people sit there and they say, oh, he's funny or she's funny, I heard they're funny. So I'm going to go on vacation in January, I think, when everyone's back home. That's why I came in today. I'm working out of spite all week. How could a guy in the media be on vacation for so long? They're on vacation. They must be going crazy. What, are they sleeping now? I mean, they must, like, during their show time, they're resting up to come back and do what? They're going to be better when they come back? What could they do on vacation if you're in the media? Do you understand how your mind works? You can't turn it off. How can you turn off your mind if you're in the media? If you're a media personality, and there must be quite a few listening to the show out of complete boredom, or people who compete with me who are on the air at this time, they're finally listening. They can. They have the time to tell their wife they went for a ride. They left the kid and the wife at home. And they went to the store, I would imagine, just to listen to Savage on the radio, wherever they are somewhere. I imagine they're in America somewhere. But how could you not be on, like, your mind goes on if you're in the media. It doesn't stop. You can't turn it off. And you look at the news, you start to gag on it. You start to gag on what you see. You see Fox News interviewing an 8-year-old girl, 9-year-old girl, asking her about her interchange with Chelsea Clinton. You can't believe this. How could Fox News turn this into a news story? Or I turn on C-SPAN and I see Obama's wife from Crook County, Illinois, giving a speech, Michelle Obama, again with the righteous indignation, chip on her shoulder, angry, and how America is basically a racist nation, not giving her opportunity. Her husband's running for the presidency when he's nothing but a political hack from the Chicago area. What do you mean there's no equality here? How could a woman with such low mentality as Michelle Obama even be listened to if there was no equality in this country? They're all unequal in terms of their lack of judgment. Listen to clip 34. Here's Michelle Obama. Let's pray to God that she's not the first lady. Listen to this.
We're still a nation that is too guided by fear. And I talk about fear a lot because it seems that we've grown to be a nation that is afraid of everyone and everything. And the problem with fear is that it clouds our judgment. You know, my mother always told me, you don't make good decisions.
Let's deconstruct this stupidity. You mean there's nothing to fear in the world? So you raise your children not to fear falling off a building. You raise your children not to fear putting their hand on a fire. You raise your children not to fear taking a drug. So how do you teach them to grow up without fear, idiot? What liberal pap? I mean, you talk about stupidity. It doesn't get any more stupid than this. You should have no fear. Just walk out in the world like a moron. That's all. Walk out in the world. Mrs. Obama will save you. Love everybody. Have your tongue cut out and your heart cut out of your body. Have no fear. So I was watching a movie. I'm going to talk about it in another way, in my own way, intuitively. I'll give you an intuitive reaction to this idiocy by Michelle Obama. Have no fear. Have no anger. Have no rage. Have no anger. Have no rage. Have no fear. In other words, have no judgment. Have no humanity. Just be a walking, talking doll, a liberal doll. You love everybody as long as they go along with your program. And then, of course, you'll see the real hate come out. But there was a movie on the other night called The Thief. I watch too many movies, I admit it. I watch too much television, I admit it. But it gives me a great deal of pleasure to watch movies at night on the cable. And I stumbled on the Independent Film Channel on this movie called The Thief, a Russian movie, 1997. About post-World War II Russia, what went on in Stalinist Russia, through the eyes of a small boy. I can't buy the thing on DVD. I tried to. I want to own this. Like, it's like reading a Dostoevsky novel. I want to watch it, you know, a couple of times over the next few years. It's so good. It's not a scene that's bad. The dialogue's superb. It's, you know, it's Russian. Full of depth. Not ha-ha, hoo-hoo, hee-hee, ho-ho. No ha-ha American movie, no false violence. It was just based on, you know, gut-wrenching reality. So what's the movie about? I'm going to make it fast because it's about how this guy, the thief, who was a brigand. Okay, so let me just back up for a minute. So I think it's called Vaz or The Thief. Can't get it in DVD. You can get it in VCR. And I think I'm going to get it unless it was copied off a TV set. I don't know. There's a young mother, Russian beauty, on a train with her son. The son's maybe 8 or 9. She's a widow. Right after the war, she lost her husband in the war. The train's filled with Russian people. And they're eating on the train. You know, it's communist Russia. They're all like they know each other, talk to each other. It was very beautifully portrayed of how the people interact with each other in that Russia. Remember, this was right after they had defeated Hitler's Germany. And they lost, what, 30 million people? The Russians lost 3 million people in the Battle of Stalingrad alone. We have no idea. We have no concept of national sacrifice in this country, none whatsoever. Let's pray we never have to know that. So that's the kind of nation it is. They gave everything, and they lost the best and the brightest of their nation in that war. And so there she's on a train. She's a widow. She's a beautiful young blonde. I forget who the actress is. She was stunning with her son. And into the compartment walks a handsome guy in a military uniform. And he right away, you know, he's classically, overpoweringly romantically overpowers her, and they do it somewhere on the train. I mean, within a few minutes, and it could happen. You understand that? It's not America. It's the way it was. She didn't scream rape and blow a whistle and have the National Organization for Railway Rapists come out. She was glad that he touched her, in fact, because she was lonely and her husband was dead. So right away they hook up. They're like together. And he gets off at the next stop. They get off and they go look for a room. You know, they're going to stay in a communal apartment. Anyway, I can't tell you the whole movie story. It's worth getting to, but let me get to it. He's not a good guy. She doesn't know it, but he's a thief. He takes rooms in these apartment houses, doesn't pay any rent, and he buys people like a trip to the circus. And while everyone in the communal house is at the circus, which he bought them because they think he's a nice guy, he rushes back to the apartment and robs them of the few possessions they have. Silver, a piece of fur, this or that. Puts it in a sack and runs off to the train. And now she's involved in his world, the thief. And she's really heartbroken because she doesn't want to live that way. But as in all people, no one is pure black and white. The thief has some saving graces. And the thief is also very appealing in some ways, as portrayed in this characterization. Because, again, it's Russian. It's not American. So it's not black or white. It's not Bruce Willis. You know what I'm saying? It's not one of our empty puppet heroes. It's not an Arnold Schwarzenegger steroid-like characterization. It's about the depth of a human being. So although he is a thief and not a good man, he is also... He's got other things going on him. So now he starts to raise this kid as his own, but he's very gruff with him. Naturally, the kid is protective of his mother. And when the man and the mother embrace, the kid tries to run in between them, and he pushes the kid away or locks him out of the apartment, says, get out of here. You know, it's not like he gives him a mobile or he seeks closure. He doesn't buy the kid like a doll and talk to him like he's his friend. It's not the kid's friend. He can't stand a little brat. And he says, basically, stay away from here. You know what I'm saying? Your mother's mine now. She's like, the guy's like a Hell's Angel, in other words, type, that we would portray him as an outlaw type. But that's the way most men are on the planet, incidentally, except in America, where everyone pretends to be something other than what they really are. But underneath it all, they wish they were that, if they could be that, if they had the guts to be that way. But they aren't. They then put on the act. So anyway, there's an important scene coming up that I'm going to tell you about. So the kid, they move into an apartment house in this movie, the thief. And the kid's a skinny little scrawny kid, and naturally other kids pick on him when he moves into this new house because that's the way the real world is, unlike Michelle Obama's view of the world. When a new kid moves in a neighborhood, they usually beat him up. I grew up in a neighborhood where that's what happened wherever you went. If you didn't survive, you know, you didn't fight for everything, you didn't survive. So that's the way the real world is, opposed to the false view of Disney. So the kid gets picked on and pushed around and punched in the nose by the little pack of brats in this little Russian housing project. So he starts throwing rocks at them and sticks. So one afternoon, the father's upstairs in his undershirt after doing the wife. The kid's downstairs and someone screams up, hey, you know, he curses him. Come on down here, your kid's a brat. So the father, this gruff thief father, who's very handsome, looks down and says to the guy, you know, shut up or I'll come down and punch you in the nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm going to come down and bash the kid's nose. I'll be right down. So he comes down, and this big, burly Russian guy who was cursing him because the kid was throwing sticks is standing there, doesn't know he was set up. The guy comes down, and he says, oh, my kid was causing trouble, huh? And the guy says, yeah, and he blasts the guy in the nose. You know, he set him up and then he breaks the guy's bicycle, the thief. And he says, if you ever look at my son wrong again, I'll bash your head in. And then he takes the kid by the hand, and he walks this kid over to the kids who were bothering him. And he says, is this the boy who was hitting you? Who was hitting you? He says, this boy? Was this boy hitting you? He says to the little scared kid who's crying, and he says, yes. He says, punch him. So this kid, who he's now, you know, it's the woman that he met on the train, the kid limply hits the kid. He says, no, I said hit him in the face. And then this kid starts to smack the boy who had hurt him in the face. He says, no, I said punch him in the face. I didn't say smack him like a girl. Do I have to get you a bow? Punch him in the nose. So he punches this kid in the nose, and he goes to the next kid. He says, did he hit you? And he takes the kid by the hand, and he says, in this life, he said, you have to fight for everything you have. And then the little kid says to him, well, what if they're bigger than you? He said, it doesn't matter if they're bigger than you. He said, you got to look them in the eye and know that they got to know that you'll kill them for the ice cream cone or that you'll never have an ice cream cone. Now, admittedly, this is a world that most Americans would find objectionable. They wouldn't accept it as real because we live in a different universe than post-war Russia, which was so grim. But I want to remind you that for millions of Americans, that reality is a daily reality today, right here in this country now. I'll be right back.
Savage.
is the Savage Nation. So I've talked about everything. Politics, red wine, movies. The movie's called Vor, V-O-R, also known as The Thief. The Russian production, 1997, directed by Pavel Chukraj. From a screenplay by Pavel Chukraj. The woman, the beautiful widowed Katya, is played by Yekaterina Rednikova. And her young boy, this guy is an unbelievable actor, Sanya, was played by Misha Filipchuk. And the handsome, suave soldier played by, who was known as Taljan, is played by Vladimir Mashkov. If I mean, you don't know any, nobody knows this is Joe. I'm just giving you the names. Who knows who they are? But what, see the difference in these Hollywood movies compared to this. The colors are different. The depth is different. The development of a story is different. It's amazing, the movie. But the point I was making with it is that you have Michelle Obama saying that we shouldn't know fear. We're a nation guided by fear. Oh, is she crazy? What is she? She clouds our judgment. Fear is a very sane emotion in certain situations, Michelle. Joe, WOR, New York City, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Savage, when you were telling that story, I got such a flashback. I grew up in a nice suburban neighborhood. Single houses, huge backyards, the whole deal. When I was 13, my dad lost his job and we moved to Brooklyn into a huge apartment building. And I was a scrawny little kid, my brother and I. And, of course, as, you know, especially in Brooklyn, you know, the gang of the apartment building, you know, used to gang up on us. You know, we were the new kids from out of town and what have you. And one day I told my brother, that's it. We're not taking it anymore. So he says, what are we going to do? I said, we're going to go over to the leader of the gang. I don't care who it is. And we're going to lay it into him. My brother's like, well, you're little. So I'm like, if you look him dead in the eye, I don't care how small you are. So next day we come downstairs, grab the kid, throw him down to the sidewalk and punch him in his face. And like, that was that. So I like 5 minutes, we would go upstairs, didn't say anything to our parents. 5 minutes later, this kid's at our door with his father. And his father is screaming bloody murder to my father. And my father just like nods his head, closed the door, and gives me this wink and a grin. I'll never forget it. Didn't say anything.
Yeah, but the bottom line is, did the kid leave you alone after that?
The kid left me alone after that. But what's funny is, 7 years later, I'm in college. I'm taking a class on Mnuchin's, his theories of family therapy. And we had to do a research paper on our family's history. And my dad never spoke about his father, never. So I had to sit down, pull my whole entire grandfather's story out of my father. And my father tells me this story, and I finally understood that story that happened 7 years earlier. My grandfather was a Jewish immigrant from Russia. Small, scrawny kid, and the same thing. All the kids in the neighborhood would gang up on him, pick on him, what have you. And one day he decided he's not going to tell anybody he's taking boxing lessons. He took boxing lessons all the while, not telling anybody, took his lickings. Finished his boxing lessons, got out on the street, would go to school, walked over to the leader of the gang, and laid it into him, and that was that.
Who, the grandfather? Your
grandfather. Yeah.
So you inherited his genes?
I guess so.
And today, you're doing well in life, I hope?
Well, I'm in graduate school. Thanks to you, I made a decision. I'm a Hasidic kid, but chose to go to a Catholic school because I can't stand liberal policies.
Catholic schools are great. They're the last hope in America. You're a Hasidic Jewish kid who goes to a Catholic school?
Well, I'm just starting now in spring semester.
Well, that's amazing. Now, I understand it happens a lot in America. The Catholic schools are a great institution in this country. There are some Jewish schools as well that Christians go to, by the way, in this country. Incidentally, you know that as well.
Yeah, of course. Well, I would accept it.
I mean, in communities where they don't want to send their kids into the cesspool of a public school that's going on around the country, what happens is the kids from the other religion are dismissed during the religious classes. So the Jewish kid's released during the Catholic lessons, and the Christian kid is released during the Jewish lessons. Often they perform very, very well in these schools. I'm way higher than the public schools and go on to very good colleges. Look, the main thing of the point of the story is Michelle Obama says that we're a nation filled with fear. And we shouldn't have fear. Doesn't that sound crazy to you in the real world? Not there. Boom. Gone. All right. That's it. I'll be here for another hour on the Savage Nation. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. It's obvious. If your dog goes out in the street and there's a big dog that wants to kill it, should it have fear? Or go give it a bone?
Savage. We'll be right back.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation 2007 drawing to a close. Let's hope that 2008 is here. I don't know what else to say. What can you hope for? It's a year like any other, you know. Up, down, the best of times, the worst of times. Subprime, schmime, Pelosi, Bush, Mosi, Obama. Yeah, it's like a mix. The whole thing's a mishmash. We don't know what to think anymore. Bridge collapse. Remember the bridge collapse into the Mississippi River, the I-35W bridge? Forgot it already. No one remembers that. Mall shooting, forgotten already. Salt Lake City Mall shooting, forgotten already. Virginia Tech shooting by Shung Wei Chu and the various and sundry relationships to radical Islam and references, also swept under the rug. Forgotten. Swept under the rug. Or the false charges against the Duke lacrosse players by a black stripper, also swept under the rug. You want me to go down the list of things that are, you know, you can't remember all these things. Then they told you there was a drought in the Southeast that was going to wipe away the Atlanta. They had to move. That pictures 3 months ago that everyone had to leave Atlanta. They had to pack a valise and put a rack on the roof and drive somewhere where there was water, not have rain. And every day the morons now on the television are saying, even though it rained and it's filling up the reservoir, it missed by a filament of almost being as droughty as it was in 1952. They can't admit that it rained and the drought is basically over. They can't admit that there are cycles in nature that don't agree with Al Gore. Cat and dog food, death of more than 100 pets, Chinese manufacturer. Safety of food products in China, oxymoronic. I was the one who told you with the pet food scare, watch out, because Eddie, what about your spaghetti? Because the element within the dog food was a protein fraction that was made from wheat. So now you're going to get your spaghetti. Where's it coming from? China? I wouldn't even eat the spaghetti unless I knew it came from American wheat. What about garlic? I'm a big garlic eater. Can't I get organic garlic here in California from Gilroy? Where's it coming from? China with malic hydrazide on it? How would I know? Thanks to George Bush, they don't have to label anything anymore. Oil, $60 a barrel at the beginning of the year. It's now going up and down there, $100 a barrel. So it's a best of times, yet the America keeps, you know, rattling along. It rattles along, rattles. You forgot that Alberto Gonzalez was driven out of office by the mad liberals who claimed to be interested in diversity. The first Hispanic attorney general they drove out of office because he did his job. Amazing. But, you know, I can't expect you to remember any of this. That's a West Virginia Tech you forgot about, Sung Woo Chu. You forgot the shooting in Salt Lake City where the youth shot white people and was stopped only because an off-duty cop killed him. And he was sent back to, if I remember correctly, Bosnia and given a hero's funeral for having killed so many Americans. You forgot that part of it, swept under the rug. You're not allowed to remember. So you can't remember certain things because it violates the thinking cap that they put on your head, the electronic thinking cap. And here we are, Hugo Chavez, dictator, and yet Sean Penn goes over there and licks his boots, looks up to him and says, there's a greater country than America. A man is a dictator, a stone-hearted monster, closes down TV stations, closes down newspaper opposition, and the Hollywood idiots flock to him, make a movie about Hugo Chavez. Tropical Trotsky. Tropical Trotsky they want. They can't wait. They can't wait for the tropical Trotsky. So the old lady threw him out now in Ross, California. I wouldn't say it was over there, because he went with the tropical Trotsky. Polar bears, they said, were dying. Turns out 5 died. Al Gore made it sound like they were all dying. We found out global warming was a hype. Most of you don't know that, although there is some pack ice melting in the Arctic, the Antarctic has the largest pack ice in recorded history, the Antarctic. That's the opposite of the Arctic. It's on the bottom of the Earth, boys and girls. Get out your globe. I know most of you liberals think it's square and flat and there is no Antarctic. But if you actually looked at the bottom of the globe, there's a place called the Antarctic, and the ice shelf there has a large amount of ice than ever in history. Don't tell that to Al Gore the next time you brainwash the children into fearing that 5 polar bears died. Could you play Blue Monday for a minute while I catch my breath here? I'm trying 3 hours to come back first day of the year. That was the last day of the year. I'm doing 3 full hours. No interviews, nothing. No callers. Sex lesson.
Here come Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
All right, thanks, Fats. Here's another. Dutch arrest 3 men suspected of attack plan. 3 men. Not 3 Muslim men. You have to read the whole story to find out that they were Muslim militants. You have to read the whole story from Reuters, the grandchildren of the Hitler dynasty are now run Reuters. They're like so guilty with liberalism that they become psychotic. They have like the you heard of the Stockholm syndrome. That's Reuters and AP. Dutch arrest 3 men suspected of attack plan. 3 men. Now, because they were not white men, they're called men. You see the news here in America? If they're a white man, then you see the picture of them immediately. If they're not white, if they're not white men, they're called 3 men. The perpetrators are 3 men. They don't describe even the color of the car for fear that they would insult the car manufacturer. So here it is. Are you enjoying this show today? Buddy needs to know. I'm feeling good. Something must be wrong with me. I feel great today. Came back to be on the air with you for New Year's Eve because it's boring. Most of you can't wait till the holidays are over. My suspicion is that most people listen to talk radio can't wait till the holidays are over. I don't think you're the average mall goer. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I enjoy the mall once in a while, but it's like they're flocking like lemmings. They're still going there. You can't get near the place. What are they doing there? They get into the habit, and they're still buying like in a frenzy. Oh, it's the bargains now for more garbage that they don't need. Can't you give it away? Give some of it away? God darn. And what else do I have here? Some good stories. Here, another one. Turkish police foil plot to kill priest. Blah, blah, blah. You have to read the whole thing. Muslims again. Bury them. Muslim. Turkish police have foiled a plot to murder a priest in a case that recalls other attacks this year against Christians in Muslim but secular Turkey. Ooh, the M word. Ooh. The European Union has long complained that Turkey, a European Union applicant, fails to fully protect the religious freedoms of its tiny Christian minority, which numbers barely 100,000. We'll go. You don't have to look any further than Bethlehem. The Arab Christians have been decimated, murdered, killed, their property stolen by Arab Muslims. But you wouldn't read that in the Associated Press because that might be too close to the truth. 1-800-449-8255. See, it's a gift being able to sort it all out and put it all together and talk about wine and movies and dogs all mixed together. Because it's a gift, that's all. And I'll do it. I'm one of a kind. It's one thing, when I'm gone, it's over. There'll be others, but no one will ever replace me. That's why I'm so secure in my position in radio. I was watching a biography thing on Scorsese last week. And the reason I was interested in this is because George Bush and Laura Bush, who allegedly were somehow Republicans and somehow conservative and somehow involved in the culture war and somehow opposed to the egregious violence and excesses of Hollywood, were sitting there in the Kennedy Center during a testimonial to Martin Scorsese. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I said, am I the only one in America who watched this? I couldn't believe my eyes. But then I realized what Bush is doing. He's getting ready for the post-presidential term of his life where he has to basically make a living. And the only way he can make a living is by appeasing liberals now. So he's like getting in with them. So they're like hire him for movies to play himself maybe. I don't know what they... Maybe he wants to play a role, a cameo in a Scorsese movie. He could play the president. How do I know what he has in mind there? But it's something he's appeasing the libs. So then I got interested in Scorsese. He was a great director, and he is. If you like it, mafia movies, which I do. He does them well. It's fraudulent. I mean, no one's like that. It's all made up except in his head and the head of Robert De Niro and Coppola. You know, everything's a fiction. The real world is never like the way movies are, which is why we love movies, because it's not the real world. The real world is horribly boring. So we like people like glorify horribly boring, you know, commonplace things. Even if they're murderers, they can be boring. You know, not every murderer is suave and debonair and interesting. Some of them are plain boring murderers. So you need movie makers like Scorsese to turn it into what it isn't. So to make a long story short, so I'm watching a biography channel of Scorsese. So I'm seeing like the early years of Marty Scorsese. It says the big money wouldn't touch him because he was too cutting edge, what they call cutting edge. So the real money wasn't there for his movies because he liked to do what he said was were movies about the perimeter of life, what happened on the outskirts. And it really resonated with me because that's what my radio show is about, is I deal with the perimeter of things. Doesn't mean it's not there. But it's like you don't really see what's going on unless you look at the edges of the property. You know, there's the house, there's the pool, and then there's the tennis court, but then there's a piece of the land beyond the tennis court. Like, what's going on the perimeter of your property? What's going on the perimeter of America? What's going on the perimeter of your psyche? What's going on in the perimeter of your mind? Is what my show is all about. That's why I'll be right back. Savage. Should be a great year for radio, 2008. I mean, you know, never mind the negativity. I mean, you know what's coming in the election. It's going to get frenzied, insane. God knows who's going to win, but either way, talk radio wins. The big winner here is talk radio, one way or the other. Christina, KNEW in my hometown of San Francisco. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I'd like to touch on a few subjects. First of all, the film War with Vladimir Mashkov.
Yes.
He also plays a part in the De Niro film 15 Minutes.
Wait. Back me up. Which movie?
The one you were discussing was War. You know, the
No, I know, but which De Niro movie, 15 Minutes? Never heard of it.
It's quite well. The two villains in there are incredible. They're probably one of the best ones.
All right, but so Vladimir Mashkov is still acting. Is he still around? That's what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, and he's a very good actor. He played this part brilliantly, because when you first look at him, he just looks like a handsome guy, but you don't know what's lurking inside him any more than you know what's inside anyone else.
Exactly. And he's I have a DVD of that film. I watch it.
How did you get the DVD, though? Did you make it?
Somebody sent it to me from Russia, but it's also available here.
A DVD, but okay, I need it with the English subtitles, though. I don't speak Russian.
We'll have English subtitles, the ones that you order here through that company that starts with an A.
Okay.
The second thing I'd like
How to- about the female lead, the beautiful widowed Katya, played by Yekaterina Rednikova? Is she still around?
She's incredible. And the little boy, the Filipchuk kid, is just out of...
Oh, my God. He's something as an actor. Through his eyes, you see the whole world. I don't want to give away the plot, but what happens to the mother in that movie is so heartbreaking, and the boy left alone. Unbelievable. Anyway, thank you for that call. 1-800-449-8255. I got tons of holiday cards, by the way, listeners. And, you know, many of you sent them to my radio affiliates, and they get forwarded to me, and I want to thank you. And to the almost 10,000 of you who have now sent donations for the lawsuit that I'm enmeshed in trying to save my skin against this pressure group Care, I want to thank every one of you for the donations. And some of them are becoming some of them are coming from very prominent people who will remain unnamed on this show. They all know what's at stake in this country, and they're all asking me why the government isn't doing what we're trying to do, and I have no answer for that. So here's a card. Dear Dr. Savage, wishing you a joyful holiday season. Enjoy listening to your show on WOR in New York. Tuned in last week when you were cooking the turkey and ate the neck. She says, I laugh because when I do that, my family goes, how gross. She says, as a child of Irish immigrants growing up in Manhattan on the Upper West Side, we ate all kinds of meats and thought nothing of it. We had tongue, pig ears, spare ribs, etc. Happy New Year, a grandma age 73. So I was thinking about turkey necks, and I was saying, look at the candidates. Now, which of these candidates could you envision eating a turkey neck? Is there's like a separation between real and the false. So let's go down the list. Could Romney eat a turkey neck? No, not if it was unless it was pureed. So I wouldn't. You know what I'm saying? Like, is that a determinant? McCain could eat a turkey neck. You could sit down with him. He could slug down a beer and eat a turkey neck. You know what I'm saying? Unless he gave up drinking. I don't know, but he could do the neck. There's no question. Huckabee, yes, he could eat two necks at a sitting. Hillary, turkey neck? Never. Never in a million years. Kucinich, he would think the turkey neck is a UFO, and he'd try to have a conversation with it and see if it needed a job or something. Dodd, well, you know, go down the list, and you can invent things to do with a turkey neck, and you can determine whether or not to vote for them based on the turkey neck, I would think. So when Michelle Obama stumping for a husband, Barack, the invented, in Iowa today, says that we're a nation still guided by fear, and we've grown to be afraid of everyone, everything, and clear fouls, and fear clouds our judgment? Is she out of her mind? She says fear cuts us off from one another? Duh. It's supposed to, Michelle. People who want to do you harm, you're supposed to have fear of them, and it's supposed to cut you off from them. I know you want dialogue with everybody. I know you and Obama are going to bring about dialogue. You know what I love about it, the Obama candidacy, is that they make believe he's a refreshing, new, trustworthy candidate. The guy is a ward politician from the suburbs of Crook County, Illinois. Why is this not discussed? His background. He's not any worse or any better than any of these other politicians, but he's a politician. How do you think he became a politician in the Crook County, Illinois, all these years? The same way they do on the Showtime series, The Brotherhood, by trading freeways for votes. Do you understand that? Why turn him into something that he is not? Why can't he just be who he is? He looks like Alfred E. Newman anyway, and I couldn't see him eating a turkey neck. I'm not for Obama, but let me. Now, again, I want to reiterate what I said earlier this year, because it's the last show of the year, and I have to repeat it until you finally hear me. I'll say it and say it and say it anyway, coming January. If Romney's religion as a Mormon became an issue to the psychobabblers in the liberal media, why is Obama's father's religion and Obama's grandfather's religion, Muslims, not an issue? Why is that not to be discussed? I mean, after all, if Romney's Mormonism was an issue to Wolf Blitzer, why couldn't Obama's relationship to Islam ever be a question, Wolfie boy?
Savage.
Like a weird night, New Year's Eve. They have the fireworks, the horns, the idiots, the drunks, the vomit, the cars, the cops. The dogs get scared when they set off the fireworks. That's the one thing I don't mind. I like fireworks. The dogs get freaked, you know. But all right, it's not a dog's world. I happen to love fireworks. Here in this city, they have them that covers up the bums puking in the gutter and defecating in mailboxes. The homicides, you know, are swept under the rug. The zoo, the San Francisco Zoo, another affirmative action appointee. The guy has no background in veterinary medicine, no background in zoos. They took him out of a park somewhere in Los Angeles, made him the zoo director in Los Angeles. And by the way, while this guy in the San Francisco Zoo, runs the San Francisco Zoo, clueless, ran the LA Zoo. It's when the editor of the Chronicle went down there to visit the Komodo dragon, and they advised he take his white sneakers off because that the dragon was liable to confuse his white sneakers with the mice, with a mouse which it eats. So he took his shoes off and the dragon bit his foot. That's the same zoo director. Now they bounce him up, Peter Principal, to the San Francisco Zoo. Elephants die. This dies. A man has sex with an animal in the zoo. Everything goes wrong. The most loyal animal care workers with 20 years experience all quit because the man is apparently you can't work with him. Play Feliz Navidad for me. That's all.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad.
That's all.
Feliz Navidad. Prospero año y felicidad.
Great song, it really is.
Feliz Navidad. Feliz Navidad.
Studied Spanish 7 years in New York. Okay, thank you very much. I get along very well with Spanish-speaking people. It's interesting, all the dialects. You know who does it better in their movies than anybody in the world of theater? Al Pacino. When he did, he can do, like, okay, he did the Cuban Spanish-American accent in, my mind is, I'm a little spacey right now. What was that one where he did, where they came over with the Coke thing, where he becomes a Coke baron? What was that movie? Whatever. See, I can't remember now. So I was trying 3 hours today. I got back up on the net for the third hour. I'm starting to falter. The brain is not functioning, not firing. The V12 is like, I can feel it. Scarface, right. So he does, the Cuban guy comes to America accent one way. Then in he does the other one where he played the guy out of jail from Lewisburg. And what was that one? I can't remember. I can't remember the movies. I like movieology. Al Pacino, he does the Puerto Rican accent so perfectly. Unbelievable how he knows all the different intonations. That's the mark of an actor who can do all of that. The most pathetic thing is to see girls from Australia trying to be a New Yorker or from New Jersey. They go to addiction coach somewhere in West L.A., you know, to sound like they're really from New York, you know. It's unbelievable to see the shiksas from Australia try to sound like they're really from Brooklyn, you know. It's unbelievable. They're the worst. But then there's the good and the bad. But I like the folks I speak with from El Salvador, from Mexico, from Guatemala. They're nice people. I get along very well with them. And this is despite what the media tries to tell you. They look me in the eye. They know who I am. Never mind what they read in the paper. They know what kind of person I am by talking to me and also how I interchange with them on a financial level. No one's ever been cheated by me, I can guarantee you. I can guarantee the liberals are the one to give them a stiffing faster than anybody. All of the great liberals who love diversity, they give them a good stiffing and don't pay them. Or they underpay them because it's under the table. They get away with murder. They pay them less than the minimum wage. All the good liberals, and they burn firewood, even though they read about global warming. Each house is like an English factory in 1850 in Marin County. When they throw the firewood on, they tell you about global warming. You ever see what comes out of a chimney? So anyway, on michaelsavage.com, the website, you've got to take a look at the World Net Daily article that I linked to. Tonight is the night for you to do it when you're bored out of your mind and you can't wait for tomorrow. And you will see that in the case of Michael Savage versus CAIR, the Council on American Islamic Relations, so-called, the lawyer, my lawyer, Dan Horowitz, God bless him, has decided to investigate this group. And what he has found so far is quite alarming. And because they attacked me, I had to defend myself. Remember, I didn't pick this fight. I want to repeat this on the show today, December 31st, 2007. Michael Savage did not seek this battle. This battle came to him. I could not simply roll over when these people wanted to kill me and take me off the air by inventing things about me, taking statements I made about Ahmadinejad out of context and trying to turn me into a Muslim hater, which I am not. And the fact of the matter is I had to defend myself, and that's what I'm doing vigorously and as vigorously as I know how. I am not alone. I have since found out that this organization, CARE, has targeted any American who dares to speak out against radical Islam. I am only the latest in a long line. It goes back to many, many others. As you well know, they may have been passengers on U.S. Airways Flight 300 who were alarmed at the behavior of these imams. It might have been terrorism expert Stephen Emerson. It might have been Daniel Pipes. It might have even been Rudy Giuliani, Robert Spencer, Representative Tom Tancredo. Every one of those people have one thing in common. They were all attacked by this organization, CARE. And my lawyer has amended the lawsuit, as you can read on michaelsavage.com, to include RICO charges. He has alleged RICO violations in the amended lawsuit against CARE because he believes there are grounds for these amended allegations. He didn't make them up out of thin air. Now, why did he say that? I will read you one paragraph from the amended lawsuit against CARE, Clause 168. The support of extremists includes the filing of frivolous lawsuits against United States citizens for reporting the threatening actions of six Muslim imams boarding U.S. Airways Flight 300 in Minneapolis, Minnesota on November 30th, 2006. This lawsuit was intended to intimidate Americans and prevent them from reporting terrorist activities. The vast amounts of overseas money, see paragraph 102 of this complaint, allows CAIR to file these lawsuits with impunity while the ordinary citizens are forced to seek pro bono counsel or face economic devastation. This is yet another example of CARE's abuse of the privilege of a free society to further a terrorist agenda. So you got to understand what I'm involved in here. It's a terrible battle, one that I didn't choose, one that I would rather not be involved in. However, once you're in it, and you got to do everything you can to defend your name and your honor, and that's all there is to it. And so if you have sent donations to the Michael Savage Legal Defense Fund, and there were 7,000 to 10,000 of you. We can't even keep up with it. Again, I want to thank you. I cannot thank each of you individually, but thank you anyway. And soon the reactions will start to come out. And unfortunately, I have to tell you, and here's the sad news, our government is not involved in defending us the way they should. Our government is not protecting us the way they should. Our own government should be doing what we are doing. Do you understand that? It's the job of the Department of Homeland Security to be making sure that citizens such as myself are not attacked by these groups. It is the job of Congress to protect American citizens. If anything else, what are they good for? What are they good for? What are they there for? To rob the taxpayer or to defend the taxpayer, protect the taxpayer? Not Schumer the big mouth. Big Shoe Schumer, nowhere to be found. Where is he? Where is he now that we need him? Where is Schumer? Where is Boxer? Where is Feinstein? Where is one Republican on this issue? Zero. Nothing. Nada. And so I got to tell you, it's not a happy situation for me this year. I've been attacked by a group of Marxists here in San Francisco, in the city council, the supervisors, these illegitimate who are going to have to be looking for a new job this year due to term limits. God knows what they'll have to do now that they have to make an honest living. I have no idea what many of them will have to do for a living. I don't think they're capable of working. They're only capable of lying and attacking. And I survived that. I was attacked mercilessly by this questionable group called CARE. And guess what? I'm still here. And I intend to be here for years to come. And I intend to do the job that the U.S. government should be doing for you. And I want to now exit this topic for a moment by telling you that in my attorney's investigations of funding, of tax-free status, of donors and whatnot, things have come up already that are quite interesting, and names have come up that are quite interesting. And many of these channels run all the way back to Dubai. And many people are starting to think that I have been punished by this group strictly for having overturned the Dubai ports deal, that they're using this group in part to get even with me for having stopped the Dubai takeover of our ports. So if you think there are no ramifications for free speech, you are mistaken. And on the other hand, or on the same hand, or by the same token, whether or not you agree with me politically, it is free speech itself that is at stake. I happen to be on the front lines right now. Tomorrow it will be you, I can guarantee you. And so therefore, I got to repeat again, I don't care whether you're a diehard liberal, I don't care if you're a communist, you don't want to live in Stalinist Russia. You don't want to live in a nation where free speech is over. You don't want to live where people look over their shoulder before they say a word, do you? Well, you're already living there, incidentally. You're more than halfway into that world where people are afraid of saying what they really think. And that's why you have to support Michael Savage. And now I'll pause. I don't even want to talk about this anymore. Truthfully, I do not right now. WOR New York City, the listeners are going to talk now. Michael, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Michael, first of all, you are an alter ego to me. I'm a Queens College graduate. I was born and raised in Queens. You give voice to so many of my own opinions and emotions. You have never been more brilliant than you are tonight. From wine to cinema to Obama's wife, you just, every shot is a kill shot to the heart. There was no fat involved at all. You were just
now you're talking Queens talk. That's good. That's nice phraseology. Very good. Well, let's even talk about wine or even turkey necks. I was joking around. Which of the candidates could eat a turkey neck? Or that Russian film, or the difference between French and Italian wine and California reds. These are all factually based statements, aren't they?
Exactly. If you want great wine, by the way, Spanish wines are fabulous. They taste like Bordeaux's of 15 years ago. Russian cinema, I happen to be a screenwriter. Hollywood establishment destroys any writer who even endeavors to write anything remotely resembling Russian, French, or Italian cinema.
Why?
Too realist? And you have that undercurrent of the kind of frustration, disappointment, and boredom people feel for New Year's Eve, even someone like me in New York.
Yeah, like tonight, it's 8:45 in New York, and you're home alone as a screenwriter, right? You're going nowhere?
No, actually, I'm cooking for my girlfriend. I'm cooking a wonderful lasagna, and
But what wine are you serving?
What's that?
What wine are you going to give her?
Oh, what we're going to have is a wonderful Spanish wine called San Roman.
In other words, it cost you less than $10.
No. It's actually a $45 wine.
Whoa, that's a lot of money for Spanish wine, isn't it? I mean, that's with euros, you're talking $60 in a restaurant.
It's a $45 wine retail, and so it would be about $90 in a restaurant.
$90. All right, right. I'm sorry, I was converting wrong. $90 is a lot of money. It's a big number in a restaurant. Most people wouldn't pay that for a wine. So it tastes like what? Bordeaux's of 15 years ago, without the fruity, without the cherry flavor.
Yes, you know what it tastes like? It tastes like a Margaux from the mid-70s to mid-80s.
Oh, my God. You got to email my guys that, because I'm a real well, I lived in Spain for a very brief period. I happened to like the Spanish people much more than I didn't get along at all with the French people. I found them mercenary and devious. They were a caricature of themselves. The Spanish people at the time were very down to earth in a much different way. The cuisine was much, to me, more palatable. I enjoyed Spain enormously. I haven't been there in so long, though, Michael. It has no meaning. You know, I have no idea what Spain is. It's a fiction in my own mind. I lived in Mallorca for a brief period of time, and it was magical in that period. It was really magical for that brief period that I was there. But it was developing into a small Miami, so I'm sure I wouldn't even recognize it if I went there. But that's neither here nor there. So the Spanish wine, huh? Now, how do I find it? What's the type? What is the type called?
Well, you know, it's any of the grapes that are from the western section of, and it get 100% any of the wines that are big and fruity and huge, and in the $40 to $60 category.
Well, wait. When you just said big and fruity and huge, which is the opposite of what I like. I was talking about the Italian wines, which don't blow you away with the taste of cherry juice.
No. When I say big,
by the way, have you ever tried that Italian wine Gaggia that I mentioned? Gaga. Oh, listen, if you're into this dry taste, and you know, you really love a great wine, you won't even be able to find it. It's not in stores, I don't think, and they'll only limit you to 6 bottles. But it's super over the top expensive. Anyway, thanks for the commentary. I'm glad you like the show, because the guy really hears. You see, screenwriters hear, or they can't survive. They hear the difference between one and the other, and if you go from, you know, I'm playing, if you can play the keys, the mental keys. I start with Obama's wife coming up with this nonsense that we're a nation guided by fear. It seems we've grown to be afraid of everyone. It clouds our judgment. Fear cuts us off. Absolute rubbish. And I try to show you what rubbish it was by countering that with a Russian film that I happen to see called The Thief, V-O-R. And explaining to you how fear is part of life, as is anger. And so many of you brainwashed children out there don't understand the difference between anger and hatred. You think that anybody who's angry hates you. You don't understand that anger is part of the emotions of man, and that means woman too. It doesn't mean you have to walk around angry at everything and everybody all the time. But why are you so afraid of anger? Did you ever ask yourself why Americans have been brainwashed into not having any anger? And who brainwashed you into fearing your own anger? Why, it's the very people who have destroyed your society. The very people who have decimated your schools and your flag and your police departments and your fire departments and the military know darn well that you should hate them for what they've done. So they very cleverly did the spade work for years in advance by telling you not to hate anybody or anything. And they'll tell you what's worthy of hating, and it's only anybody who stands up to them. You have been sold a bill of goods that has unraveled your very nation itself, and only righteous anger can save this country. I'll be back in a moment.
Savage.
Here we go, the last few minutes of the Savage Nation for 07. Who are ready to rouse up Leviathan? Who are ready to rouse up Leviathan, we all ask. And unfortunately, none of these are heavy lifters. That's the problem with the election. That comes straight out of Job from the Bible. Who are ready to rouse up Leviathan? And unfortunately, no one is a weightlifter for us. I want to close with something from the Bible, from Job. Job, as you know, was a pretty miserable guy. Today they would say he needed Prozac, and they would have treated him. In fact, they would say that everyone who wrote the Bible or is quoted in the Bible needed treatment and closure and therapy and a treatment center. And then, of course, well, God only knows what we'd have if we had what we have today. And Job, if you read Job and you read Shakespeare, you can see so much of what Shakespeare wrote was derived from the Bible. Of course, Shakespeare was quoted the Bible very frequently, but much of the great literature, as you well know, many of the greatest lines in modern English literature have come, at least in the last century did, from the Bible, from biblical phrases. So here's Job, and he says, "Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not perish at birth?" Remember what was done to Job. You have to know the story of Job and the argument and the boils and what happens to his family and how Job curses his life, but he still believes in God. So he says, "Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not perish at birth? Why did the knees receive me, and wherefore the breasts that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept, then had I been at rest, with kings and counselors of the earth who built up waste places for themselves, or with princes that had gold who filled their houses with silver. Or as a hidden, untimely birth I had not been, as infants that never saw light. There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. There the prisoners are at ease together. They hear not the voice of the taskmaster. The small and great are there alike, and the servant is free from his master." It's from Job. And as I say, Job was a very unhappy man. Job had reason to be miserable. He didn't need treatment. He didn't need therapy. He didn't need anger management. He didn't need Prozac. Job had been cursed by God. And Job, therefore, was an unhappy, angry man. He didn't need treatment. He didn't need therapy. He didn't need anger management. He didn't need some psychopath telling him what to feel and what to think any more than you do. No, what we need is something much different than that. We need a leader. A leader who is ready to rouse up Leviathan. That's what we need. We need a leader ready to rouse up Leviathan. And I want you to remember that. I want you to ask yourself if Hillary is a leader ready to rouse up Leviathan. Is Giuliani ready to rouse up Leviathan? Is McCain ready to rouse up Leviathan? They all seem to be asleep to me, rather asleep to me. And so on that note, ladies and gentlemen, it's been nice to know you in 2007. I look forward to seeing you in 2008 with God's will.
Savage.